listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, where we are dedicated to awakening the world to the power, importance, and mastery of human emotions. Do you know that chronic pain affects more Americans than heart disease, cancer, and diabetes combined? And doctors currently have two ways of treating this chronic pain, essentially, ibuprofen and Tylenol, or opioids, things like OxyContin, Percocet, and Vicodin. We're now experiencing a national epidemic of prescription drug overdoses. My guest today, Beth Darnall, PhD, is here to suggest alternatives and talk about this opioid issue. So please post your comments and questions on our blogs at emotionalpro.com and blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. And you can also talk with me or Beth over our toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570. 888-498-0570. And you can sign up for Full Power Living's broadcast through subscription on iTunes. Don't forget. Well, Beth Darnall, PhD, is Clinical Associate Professor in the Division of Pain Medicine at Stanford University. And she treats individuals and groups at the Stanford Pain Management Center. As a pain psychologist, she has 15 years experience treating adults with chronic pain, and she's also lived through her own chronic pain experience, which we'll ask her about during the show. Her work empowers people to harness the power of their own mind-body connection so that pain is reduced with less need for medications. She is the author of Less Pain, Fewer Pills, Avoid the Dangers of Prescription Opioids, and Gain Control Over Chronic Pain. That book, I just finished reading it this week. It offers concrete, evidence-based psychological and behavioral alternatives to pain control. So, Beth Darnall, it's indeed a pleasure to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Oh, Eileen, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
My husband, and I'll be talking about him some during the show, became ill about 5 years ago, and before that, I never heard of opioids. So will you start us off telling us exactly what opioids are?
Yeah, sure. Opioids are the medications that most people think of when they use the term painkillers, prescription painkillers. These are narcotics, and they reduce the intensity of pain signals reaching the brain, but they also affect areas of the brain controlling emotions, and that diminishes, you know, the effect of pain. But you can also see how something that changes pain and also changes an emotional experience could set people up for problems taking the medication if they have things in their life that are particularly stressful, or if they have a history of difficulty with addiction or substance use, etc. These opioid medications are, you know, they fall into different classes, but you may have heard of them as Vicodin, OxyContin, Percocet, morphine, hydrocodone, codeine, etc. So, you know, OxyContin, oxycodone, Vicodin, and Percocet are the best known names of prescription opioid medications. And while they are prescribed for pain, and they do a really good job at treating pain in the short run, what we've come to understand is that they're not so great for treating chronic pain, ongoing pain, and that can set people up for some problems. So we need to be very mindful of the risks and work together to minimize those risks so people stay safe.
Thank you. What happened to change how long these opioids are used? If they're effective in the short run, but less effective in the long run, what happened?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in the short run, they're very effective. But what happens is that the human body is pretty smart, and it quickly adapts to medications. And so we call this tolerance. We develop a tolerance to it. And the human body develops, in general, develops a tolerance to opioids pretty quickly. And so what that means is that they work less well over time because people aren't getting the same effect from the medication. So people will then need increasing doses of the medication to get the same effect. And this is different than addiction. You know, often there's a people will are prone to conflate addiction with physiological tolerance and dependence, and they're fundamentally different things. Eileen, if you take opioids, if I take opioids, in you know relatively short period of time, we'll find that we probably need a little more of the medication, or we need to start taking it more frequently in order to achieve the same amount of pain relief. So the short story is they work less well over time, but the risks, as we start taking more and more medication, the risks are compounding. So risks are increasing while pain control is decreasing. This sets people up for a lot of problems.
Wow. Well, I want you to know that I've been through this with my husband. I'm going to ask you some questions about it.
Sure.
My husband passed away in January, and largely because his pain, which had been going on for a long time, became intolerable, and he just gave up and said, I want to go to hospice. So my next question really has something to do with what I observed with him. Even when he was alive, I used him in talking on my radio program, so forgive me. You know,
yeah.
I really learned a lot about this because I'm basically an alternative medicine person, and he was a retired neurosurgeon. And so we were very different in our approaches to treatment. And there are side effects to opioid use.
Yeah.
And I want you to talk about what those are, because the more you take them, the more you see those side effects, I think.
Absolutely. And the first thing I just want to say is I'm so sorry for your loss and the suffering of your husband and yourself. And that's
me too.
It's just so sad and tragic. So my heart really goes out to you.
Thank you.
You've witnessed firsthand some of these side effects that, you know, for some people actually end up becoming more problematic than the pain itself.
Exactly.
And so, you know, and so this is a really interesting discussion and phenomenon. One of the most underappreciated side effects of opioids is that they can increase pain over time. Now, try and get your head around that, right? You're taking something to help your pain, and it's actually serving to make it worse. So this is maybe called hyperalgesia, hyper meaning high, algesia meaning pain. And so hyperalgesia meaning that pain increases over time. There's a sensitivity to pain that develops as a consequence of taking opioids. So you can see how that would lead people to need more and more and higher doses. Another side effect is that they change your hormones. So they reduce testosterone, they reduce estrogen and progesterone. So reduced testosterone, reduced estrogen and progesterone, when we get these hormone changes, well, hormones have a profound influence on how we experience pain and our pain intensity. So that's one pathway by which they may also increase pain, is that, you know, they're fundamentally changing things in our body that influence neurotransmitters, they influence our mood, they influence how we experience pain. They influence our libidos. That can change our sexual desire, and that can fall away. And for men, it can reduce their capacity to engage in intercourse. For women, it can lead to fertility problems. And the other one I just want to mention very quickly is that opioids have very clearly been shown to disrupt sleep architecture. So what that means is that you don't get as restful a night of sleep when you're taking opioids. And a lot of people think, well, I need the medication to help me get to sleep. But just like alcohol, they really kind of mess with your sleep at night. And so it's less quality sleep. And what that means is that you're likely to wake up less rested. And what we know from the research is one of the best predictors of how much pain a person has on any given day is the quality of the sleep their night before. So you can see how it's a really slippery slope, how opioids, while we're taking them to help our pain, beneath the surface, they can be undermining pain control by dysregulating multiple systems throughout the human body.
As you so accurately said previously, that is exactly what we experienced with my husband. And the other thing that I'm so aware of as you're talking with me, now in your book you say that part of the reason maybe that we have difficulties with over-prescription or prescribing without knowing how things go is because a lot of times they're prescribed by primary care physicians who don't have a lot of training in pain control. My husband, since he was a neurosurgeon, he was treated very nicely, and he had a palliative care specialist and a cancer specialist. But what I just want to say from my own experience, as many times as I went back to these people saying what is going on, they did not have the information, or they didn't give me the information that you just stated.
I know, and it's really tragic, Eileen, and it's why I'm on an absolute mission in doing so much public education to bring this forward to the masses, because many healthcare providers do not know this information. Unfortunately, a lot of our medical care is very fragmented and can be so generalized that it really requires a specialist, a person who is very skilled in treating pain, who myself, I'm a scientist, I'm a pain researcher. A lot of my research focuses on opioids, on pain psychology and alternative methods of treating pain. So I know all of this information. And it's it was the main reason why I wrote Less Pain, Fewer Pills, was because I recognized that both physicians, healthcare providers in general, and certainly patients did not have this information. The dots were not being connected cohesively and explained in such a way that the problem is when we don't have this right information, we keep prescribing more of what isn't working. And that leads to increased risk, greater side effects. And so what do we do when we have more side effects? We start prescribing additional medications to treat the side effects. And so, you're taking opioids, you're not getting good sleep, so then we might prescribe a sleep medication for that. You have, hormone changes, we need to give you medications for that. You have depression, we need to give you more medication for that. So we're layering on more and more medications, increasing the complexity and increasing the risks of accidental overdose, compounding problems. And what we're doing is we're over-medicating Americans while simultaneously under-treating their pain, because we're treating pain the wrong way. So this needs to change in the United States. We need to start treating pain better.
You know, what I'd really like to add to that, just for those of you who are listening, is that the situation I'm describing was actually unique in that we had a medical doctor in the situation of having the pain, and he was being treated by some of the top medical doctors in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we still weren't getting what you're talking about. And we went, I can't tell you completely enough that we followed exactly the pattern that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And those of us who were caring for my husband, and, he'd have anxiety, he'd have another big issue that you haven't talked about yet, but I know you do in Less Pain, Fewer Pills, is constipation. Because opioids constipate you. And we did discover, I wanted to just tell you and the world this. Through my one of his oldest daughters, we discovered coconut oil, and that was an absolute blessing for him. But opioids naturally constipate people.
Yeah, yeah, they really do. And so opioids are central nervous system depressants. So everything kind of slows down. You know, your gut slows down, your bowels slow down, your breathing slows down. And this is how people die. They go to sleep at night. And, you know, if you take one pill too many, or if you are taking an opioid in combination with another medication that's a central nervous system depressant, like a benzodiazepine, if you take an alcohol, you drink an alcoholic drink right before bed while taking opioids, alcohol is a central nervous system depressant. Central nervous system depressants slow respiration. They slow the breathing. And so what happens is that people may combine medications or take a little too much, and the breathing stops at night, and people just don't wake up. So this is really an area that we need to target. And there's a huge focus on accidental overdose deaths, rightly so. That needs to be a focus. But what you're also bringing up is this idea of the phenomenon of constipation, something that may be minimized, but by those who haven't experienced it at the clinical level. But opioid-induced constipation can be so painful and problematic for individuals that they will stop opioids because of it, or the big focus of the medical care actually becomes managing the constipation. It becomes more important than the pain itself.
Yes, and that's a lot of things. You know, I mentioned earlier that I didn't know anything about opioids just a few years ago, but this week on television, I saw an ad talking about yet another medication that treats a major constipation.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a, you know, because there's so many Americans on opioids now, and, you know, pharmaceutical companies are really promoting this. I think there was an ad in the Super Bowl about opioid-induced constipation.
Wow.
Look, it's an important problem. People need solutions. Those solutions exist. Where I come at it is, how about we focus on minimizing the medication that's causing this problem in the first place? I mean, let's just get real. You know, let's help people need and use fewer opioids so that they need fewer pharmaceuticals to treat the secondary effects that they're causing.
Yes, and I really so thank you for that. I wish I had had your book 3 years ago at least. Another phenomenon along with this is something that the doctors call breakthrough pain, despite and as you point out in your book, you take pain medication, you expect it's really going to work, it's going to take your pain away, but in actual fact, it increases your sensitivity to pain, and so maybe you have a time-to-release opioid that's supposed to last for 8 or 12 hours. Toward the end of that, your pain breaks through, and so they give you another medication to handle breakthrough pain.
That's right, and it's crazy-making because an expectation of being pain-free is simply unrealistic, and it's a setup for very high doses. It's a setup for a lot of side effects, a lot of secondary problems. Again, the point isn't to be pain-free because that's really, it shouldn't be the goal. What we want to do is empower people to best manage their own pain non-pharmacologically so that they need and use the lowest doses possible to achieve, you know, adequate pain control. And so if you're if you're managing your own pain as effectively as you can, and there's a lot to this that most people don't know. So if we can give people the right education, the right formula, and they have the right program, and they know what to do, and they're doing what they need to do, and so their pain is reduced to a lower level, then they can use various medications. Opioids may be one part of that regimen, but ideally not, because we know that they're not great for long-term pain. But, you know, back in the not-so-distant future, there was an expectation and even marketing around this idea that, you know, pain-free was not only possible, it was your human right. And absolutely, there's medications that, you know, and it's all about just taking a pill. And, you know, here we are. I mean, look at us as a nation. It is not in final balance, this has not been a helpful approach. And those of us who are working in the field of pain management and also pain research, we've known this all along. We know that pain isn't best treated with a pill alone. It's best treated comprehensively. Now what we've seen is the American public have paid the price. We've learned this the hard way as a nation, and it's time to come back into balance.
Yes, and I would say, having been an alternative medicine person and then married to a doctor for about 20 years, that I believe that doctors really have been trained to and want to help alleviate the problems that people who come to them have.
Yeah.
And part of the difficulty here is, I'm assuming, kind of a whitewash of what the medication actually does, which I personally think we're running into more and more, that we'll whitewash or we'll ignore evidence in research that shows anything contra to what we the pharmaceutical companies want you to believe about this particular medication. Comments?
Yeah, it's absolutely. So, I mean, my heart goes out to physicians and prescribers, you know, because nurse practitioners, physician assistants can prescribe pain medication. So it's really any healthcare provider that can prescribe. And, you know, in general, they're used to prescribing an antibiotic and seeing people get better. You know, you prescribe a medication, it solves the problem and people get better. And that's the model in which they're generally trained. But, you know, chronic disease management, and in particular, chronic pain, it's really a completely different animal, and they are woefully ill-prepared to deal with the management of chronic pain in primary care or in internal medicine. You know, I mentioned in Less Pain, Fewer Pills that, you know, as recent as 2012, you go to the average medical school in the United States and those students are receiving between 4 and 11 hours of pain education across 4 years of medical school. So you imagine that, you know, this student gets 4 hours of pain education. It's completely fragmented, by the way. You know, you'll learn a little bit in a module about cancer. You'll learn a little bit, you know, talking about diabetes, but there's no cohesive curriculum on managing chronic pain. So they get virtually no treatment, no education. Then they're thrown into the treatment world, into clinic. And who are they managing? I mean, 100 million Americans are living with ongoing pain to some degree, 1 in 3. So what's the number one reason patients visit their doctor? It's pain. It's the first symptom, right? So they come in and they're woefully prepared to understand how to best treat pain. That's number one. Number two, even if they understand that pain is best treated comprehensively, we don't have great systems in the United States to allow physicians to connect their patients to the right resources. So this is another thing that needs to change. Number one, we need better pain education for all healthcare providers in the United States. Just hands down, this is really put forward in the National Pain Strategy. We need better education for all healthcare providers so that we can educate and empower patients appropriately. But then on the heels of that, we need the resources. So we need reimbursement reimbursement. We need insurance coverage. We need national programs that are effective, and we need these to be accessible to the patients who need them so that they just don't go to an emergency room or to their doctor and walk away on high-dose opioids.
Well, I would just say that your work is certainly cut out for you.
Indeed.
That's a lot. We need to take a break here. You can talk with my guest, Dr. Beth Darnall, directly with your concerns about opioids. 888-498-0570. 888-498-0570. And one of the things you might consider talking with us about is your opinion about whether the government should regulate or restrict a doctor's prescription of medication like opioids. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them. Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. First of all, you're invited to visit emotionalpro.com for two things. You can get my free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions, and that can help you to move toward mastery over the emotions that come up in all of our lives every day. Second, sign up to be on our mailing list so we can send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our programs. For example, next week I'm talking with pediatric dentist Roger Lucas about how to prevent tooth cavities, especially for very young children, by making simple dietary changes. And they will surprise you because his book is More Chocolate, Fewer Cavities, something of that nature. So that's 9 a.m. Pacific time next Thursday. And the week after that, I really want you to make time to listen to, on July 7th, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Michael Charles is going to discuss his new book, which he has entitled Too Big to Hide, Too Dark to Blend. And that chronicles his life as a Black man and a very successful physician. And Dr. Mike Charles worked with my husband and has become a very successful orthopedic surgeon in the San Francisco Bay Area. So you'll want to listen to that. Thank you for helping us with our mission since 2004 of transforming our world through understanding the importance, mastery, and power of human emotions. And our topic today is how to deal with chronic pain without long-term use of opioids, which is a class of prescription medication that brings whole sets of new issues for patients, including that they may increase our sensitivity, they likely will increase our sensitivity to pain. And my guest is Less Pain, Fewer Pills author, clinical psychologist, and Stanford pain management specialist, Beth Darnall. So, Beth, I want you to take a minute here to tell us a little bit about your own personal story, because that's what drew you to have concern for chronic pain in the first place.
Yeah, so I had chronic pain as a child, and of course this is back in the day, and never went to the doctor for treatment. Just sort of, suffered with it, frankly, and learned to just live with it. But later, as an adolescent, I believe I was about 19 years old, I had a horrible experience where my boyfriend was killed. And as one can imagine, this was shocking. I was experiencing grief, sadness, all of that, and was not equipped to handle that emotional experience. It was overwhelming. Unsurprisingly, my pain increased, and I found myself terrified. I had increasing pain. It was hard to breathe. I didn't know what was wrong. I was away at college at the time, away from family, and I didn't know what to do, and I was scared, and I went to the hospital, and I just wanted someone to tell me what was wrong, ideally, to get me on a treatment pathway, but fundamentally, I didn't know what was wrong, what was causing this pain. And they ran tests, and, they did all the right things with running the tests. They were all negative. There were no answers. So they couldn't tell me what was wrong, but they sent me home with a bottle of Vicodin. And that was the solution. I wasn't given any alternatives. Nobody educated me about either the risks, the alternatives, or there was no treatment plan going forward. All I was given was opioids. And I took them exactly as prescribed, and fortunately came to an understanding independently that over time, these medications weren't helping me. And in fact, they were causing problems of their own. And so I had to get off of the opioid medication myself. And then what I was left with was my pain. And I had to figure out how to do this differently. And so I did it the hard way. And that's what I did. And my experience, as difficult as it was truly a gift, because I understand the patient experience exquisitely. I don't understand every single person's individual experience, but I come at this as a clinical psychologist, as a researcher, as a scientist, as a pain educator. But fundamentally, I have the expertise of having lived through this as a patient and having had to figure it out myself. So I connect very well with patients around this issue. I was so motivated to write Less Pain, Fewer Pills because I had patient after patient coming to me, sitting in my office, crying, upset with the consequences of the medications themselves. I mean, pain is one part of the problem. Then you have the consequences of the medications and the problems those cause. And they would be crying in my office and saying, but nobody ever told me about this. Nobody ever explained this to me. I wish I'd never started this medication. And they were upset. They were angry. And they have every right to be. We have failed patients in providing the right education and connecting them with alternatives. And, there's no group of individuals to blame here. It's been an unfortunate sort of evolution of medicine or culture, society, but now here we are, and patients have, we've failed patients. Now it's time to correct the course.
Wow. Yes, it seems like a wild horse, and I can see what you're saying. It's like we Americans, we wanted our pain handled. People stepped up and said, we can handle your pain. They didn't tell us, or maybe they didn't know at the time, but they also didn't tell us all the things that could happen from it. I became the emotional pro because of my own struggle with emotions. So I really appreciate how your work has come out of your own experience. And I so appreciate you sharing that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You know, the one thing I'd like to mention about that, Eileen, is that the experience of pain is really, there are dimensions to it that are unappreciated. And so most people think of pain as just being the ouch or the hurt that you feel somewhere in your body. You know, it's that unpleasant experience you want to get away from. So we think of it as being located. It's a physical experience located in the body. The actual definition of pain is that it's both a sensory and an emotional experience. And this isn't my definition. This is the definition from the International Association for the Study of Pain. So this is the leading authority, global authority on pain research and treatment in the world. And pain is a negative sensory and emotional experience. So the emotional dimensions of pain are not well appreciated, and they're certainly undertreated. So if we just focus on the physical part of pain, that sensory part, and we're constantly chasing that with more and more medication, can easily see that it's a setup for problems. Whereas if we focus on treating the whole definition of pain, which includes those emotional aspects, we're not only treating pain better and more comprehensively, but it can mitigate the experience of sensory suffering, because we're actually treating the full definition of pain for what it is.
Yes, I really appreciate that. You're bringing back memories. As I had some wonderful people helping me as my husband was ill and bedridden and all of that, and he would get anxious through this whole thing, and I'm a therapist. I attempted to help him with that anxiety, and we found that we basically went in circles. He ended up feeling like there was no way to deal with the anxieties and fears that he had, because we didn't know the influence of the medication. And again, right. One of my stepdaughters and I went on to the internet and we looked things up, and we found some things about the opioids which enabled us to get the doctor to stop one course of action anyway and move to another. It was barely more effective. But we couldn't even find this information on the internet completely.
Yeah, and that's tragic. You know, the truth is that at the Stanford Pain Management Center, you know, just even talking about medications alone, I mean, we treat pain with acupuncture, with mindfulness-based stress reduction, with pain psychology, with occupational therapy, nutrition. I mean, there's all of these different ways we treat pain. But when we just talk about medications, there's 203 medications that are used to treat pain. Opioids are just one class of medications, but there's such an over-focus on using opioids to treat pain when, in fact, they can cause the greatest number of problems. So this is really unfortunate that, you know, you and your husband were part of that, you know, went down that pathway and weren't able to be connected with a different course of action that would likely have been better for him.
Yes, although, you know, I decided to air this program because of that, which could, you know, have some things positively come out of it. But to segue off of what you just said, suppose I'm in that position again. I'm not myself. I'm somebody else. I'm in that position.
Yeah.
What the heck could I do about it today?
Yeah. So great question. What people should do is education is critical. So, you know, I have less pain, fewer pills available. There's better information available even online today than there was just a few years ago even. So educate yourself. Connect yourself with providers who are also well-educated. I happen to be a psychologist and a scientist. I provide a lot of education on this topic. So it may be a psychologist, it may be a physician, but look for those providers who have a comprehensive understanding of the risks of opioids. Often, if you work with a board-certified pain physician, you find pain physicians often in pain clinics, like the Stanford Pain Clinic, or UCSF has a pain clinic. There's other, wherever you are in the United States, if you're near a metropolitan area, often you can find an academic pain clinic connected to a hospital or healthcare system. You want to be sure that this is a comprehensive pain clinic and not simply a pain clinic that focuses on giving opioids and giving people shots. Again, you know, opioids or any medication, any treatment approach can be one part of treating pain, but it can't be the whole part. You want to look for programs that focus on empowering patients to best control their own experience. And then, in combination with that, offer a broad range of services so that people aren't steered down a single pathway that is laden with risks.
Okay. So you bring up a really interesting question there that you haven't elucidated, but I'm going to. And that is our American tendency, in my opinion, to turn ourselves over to other people to fix us as opposed to taking responsibility for our own fix-up.
That is very well stated. For, I think, too long, there's been a focus on, I go to the doctor fixes it. They give me a pill. They give me the antibiotic. I go there and my health, you know, the wand is waved. There's a pill for everything. And, you know, Americans, we want what we want when we want it. And we feel entitled to the quick fix or the pill. And let me tell you, I'm not going to let the pharmaceutical industry off the hook here. They've done a brilliant job at brainwashing the public to believe that there is a, you feel sad today? There's a magical pill for that. You have pain? We can completely eradicate that. You have this symptom, that symptom. Take this pill and you will suddenly be skipping through a field of daisies in this mythical perfect life. And, you know, it really plays to that part of our psyche that wants to believe the fantasy. I mean, who doesn't want that fantasy to be real? The problem is it's not real. It's only a fantasy. And the management of pain, just like the management of diabetes or obesity, is really everyday choices. It's a lifelong plan. It's a dedication to wellness. It's working your program. It's putting yourself first. It's everything that you do yourself that makes the difference in whether your pain gets better or worse. And it has very little to do with the pills.
I'm going to listen to that several times. Now, so in terms of education, I want to be clear. I want you to be clear here. Where are your books available?
Yeah, so on Amazon, and really anywhere books are sold, but Amazon's a really easy place to find Less Pain, Fewer Pills. Also at Bull Publishing, that's my publisher, Bull Publishing, their website. I have a second book coming out the beginning of August, and it's the Opioid-Free Pain Relief Kit. And that is a hands-on practical book written at the eighth grade level, so it's appropriate for anyone who wants to learn how to manage pain without opioids, and that will be available through Bull Publishing as well, and it's a really low price point. We wanted to make sure that cost wouldn't be a barrier, and both of my books come with an audio CD, an audio file that helps people retrain their brain and their nervous system away from pain, so it really is non-pharmacological, self-empowering pain relief.
That's wonderful. And the website for Bull, which is B-U-L-L Publishing, is bullpub, B-U-L-L-P-U-B.com.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to say, please visit my website at BethDarnell.com. Almost any way you spell it, you'll get a redirect and get to my website. So it's BethDarnell.com. I have articles. I have videos. There's a lot of education, a lot of resources there. I just invite all of the listeners to take a peek around and learn everything you can about pain. And there's so much freedom in using these self-empowerment techniques.
Is your book available on Kindle?
It is. It is. Less Pain, Fewer Pills is on Kindle. And you can also find that on Amazon.com as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I know you point out that chronic pain is a lot like chronic stress. It's similar in etiology and also how it affects us. Would you talk about that similarity, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So most people who have chronic pain are aware that, you know, when they have more stress, they have more pain. It's not always, but most people observe a close connection between stress and their pain. And there's very clear physiological reason for that. And that is because the body responds to stress the same way it responds to pain. And so for that reason, it's almost like they're one and the same because they really operate so similarly. And there's this bidirectional relationship between them. So when we experience pain or when we experience stress, a very predictable cascade of physiological responses happen. And so our breathing changes, it becomes short and shallow, our muscles tense, we brace against the pain and try and protect ourselves. Our blood vessels constrict. We get some biochemical changes in our body, some stress hormones. We may get some cortisol, some adrenaline. So we have these biochemicals coursing through our veins and throughout our body, preparing us to escape. So when we experience stress or we experience pain, our body reacts in a way that's going to help us escape the threat, whatever that is. So I tell people that think of your pain as being your harm alarm, and it's designed to get your attention, to alert you that there is a threat afoot and that you need to get away from that. But the problem is you can't readily escape pain when it's coming from inside of you. If you have back pain, you have a migraine, you can't run away from that, unfortunately. So you get these stress responses, these pain responses, just ongoingly. You know, they're just your harm alarm is ringing, and those stress responses are going. And it turns out that these pain and stress responses serve to worsen your pain over time. So just like opioids can increase pain over time, the treatment can increase the problem over time. Similarly, we're hardwired as humans to respond to pain in such a way that once pain becomes chronic, these responses actually feed back into the cycle of pain. And that's why it's so important that one learn ways to break this cycle, to retrain mind and body so that we can become less reactive to pain and to stress. We learn ways to put a container around this, to dampen pain and stress responses, and we essentially learn how to self-treat the stress in our lives. When we have pain, we need to learn how to slow heart rate, slow the breathing, decrease the muscle tension. And what that does over time is it actually changes the way pain is processed. And in your brain, you're able to change some of these patterns, these neural patterns, and also these physiological patterns. And you're literally, I say, you're training your brain away from pain. You're also training your body away from pain. Now, this isn't something that happens overnight. This isn't take one pill and you notice the differences immediately. Most people, when they first try these skills, they do notice differences right away. But those differences don't last. What's required to achieve lasting differences is regular practice. You're retraining your nervous system. So I tell people, give it, you know, 4, 6 or so weeks, and you'll have really regular, dedicated practice, daily practice of the skills, you are going to notice differences.
You remind me, one of my sons-in-law is an electrical engineer, and he used to work on a project to reduce cabin noise in private jets. And he was kind enough to take me to his workplace and show me how they were doing it. And what they did essentially was feed a sound back to the sound that was going out, and it neutralized it. And that strikes me as what you're talking about, like when you are talking about the deep relaxation response and using diaphragmatic breathing or using bilateral touch, like or sound, as is used in EMDR.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I mean, certainly that's part of it. These relaxation responses, you know, the deep breathing, you know, slowing the heart rate, learning to retrain the nervous system, it's the antidote to pain. It literally neutralizes those pain and stress responses. What's interesting about the analogy you just brought up about your son-in-law is that, you know, another non-pharmacological way that pain is treated or managed is a spinal cord stimulator. And this is literally an electronic device that you have a small surgical procedure, and they implant this device on your spinal cord. And there's leads right around the spinal cord where the device is placed, and it transmits electrical signals that interfere with the pain signals. And so it's very similar, you know, to what you just talked about, that you can send a signal that interferes with the other signal, and that reduces the power and the intensity of the pain signals themselves. So there's different ways in which we can sort of, you know, harness this endogenous or this human capacity to modulate pain.
Thank you. I believe we could talk on this for a long, long time. I really want to thank you for writing your book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills, and remind people that they can get more information at Beth Darnell, BethDarnall.com, or at Bullpub, BULLP, as in Paul, UB.com. I can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing to educate us, to bring the facts to the public, and to help people with the push that we're being given to learn new ways of being in the world rather than turning ourselves over to others or to pills or whatever, but to empower ourselves and take responsibility. So thank you so much for sharing what you've learned about opioids and what we can do instead of just popping pills through your book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills. Thanks,
Eileen,
Beth, very much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I just have to give you truly my heartfelt thanks to you for providing the forum for me to continue to bring this information forward to people.
It is my pleasure. My husband and I honeymooned in China, and our hosts provided everything for us, including toilet paper when we used the public toilets and coins to use the public toilets. And when we would say thank you, they would say, "It is my honor."
Oh, so beautiful.
I pass that on to you. So join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time, that's noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Next Thursday, my guest is pediatric dentist Dr. Roger Lucas, sharing how we can curb the formation of tooth cavities, particularly in young children, through simple dietary changes. Listen next Thursday. Also listen on our archives and invite your friends and family to listen with you. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media, regardless of the challenge, does an excellent job of producing this show, so thank you, Paul. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.